such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it is my privilege to be sitting in today for Father Anthony, as I do here every Monday on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And we have a very special show planned for you today, and it involves the 150th anniversary of the Little Sisters of the Poor as a congregation here in the United States. And I have with me in the studio Sister Dorothy and Sister Carolyn of the Little Sisters of the Poor. Sisters, welcome.
Thank you, Mary.
You guys, 150 years in the United States. That's incredible.
It's been a beautiful 150 years.
Yeah, you have to be one of the older religious congregations of women then in the country, yes.
We're among the oldest,
yeah.
Although I am
Sisters
a
of Mercy, I think, were here first, correct?
They were here before us, and
right.
In so many cities there, the different congregations of religious sisters are the ones that welcomed us and helped us get settled and started.
Beautiful.
It's very beautiful.
So 150 years in the United States, what city did you go to first?
Our first city was, you just left my head.
Brooklyn. Was it on the East Coast?
No.
Brooklyn.
It was Brooklyn.
Okay. You were in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it was,
okay.
Sorry.
So that is kind of the East
Brooklyn,
Coast.
Brooklyn, yes.
Right? It's
I'm
east
sorry.
Of Chicago.
I'm sorry.
That's fine, sister. Sister Dorothy, we thought we would start by talking, before we get into all your good work here for the last 150 years in the United States, a little bit about your foundress, St. John Jugan, and why she decided to give up everything, including, you know, her desire to marry and have children, to found a congregation of religious women for the elderly poor. Can you talk a little bit about her?
Certainly. St. John Jugan was born in Cancale in France, and it was a fisherman's town. And her father was lost at sea. She had siblings, and for a number of years, of course, she had to help her mother at home. And then she decided to break out on her own, and she left the home. And she worked at a hospital for a while, and then she worked at a private home helping a woman. And then after the woman died, she left her all of her money, but it wasn't very much to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
John Jugan had an apartment, and she did receive a proposal from a young man, actually twice.
Mm-hmm.
And her response to him, as it was to her mother when she left, "God wants me for a work that is yet unknown." So she had her eyes even back then.
Yeah, she had a premonition that there was something she was supposed to be doing.
She had her eyes fixed on Christ the whole time.
Yeah.
She knew that there was something there. And we believe that he prepared her for that because of the work that she did, working in the hospital and then helping an elderly woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, it was a cold day in winter, and she saw an elderly woman on the street who was infirm, and she took her off of the street, carried her up a narrow stairway in her own apartment, put her in her own bed, and there she nursed her, clothed her, and fed her, and nursed her back to health.
Hmm.
The people in France heard about that, and more elderly people were coming to her. It was during the aftermath of the French Revolution, and people were literally living off the streets.
Right.
They had to beg for their clothing and their food, but when they came to her, she said, "Oh, no, I will beg for you."
Right. And so that's where your tradition of begging came
that's
about.
That's correct.
Yes. So to talk about that a little bit, Sister, in your congregation, when John Jugan founded it, like formally, did she right away designate two of the sisters to become begging sisters for the community, or did it kind of develop over time?
No, actually, she did it herself.
Okay.
She went out among the people, and it was difficult for her to go out because she came from a proud and haughty family, but she knew it was God's work.
Mm-hmm.
And she went out and she begged for God and his beloved poor.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, she would go begging from house to house.
Right.
One day she encountered a gentleman who, for some reason, slapped her across the face.
Oh, my goodness.
She drew back, looked up at him, and said, "Thank you, sir. That was for me. Now do you have something for my poor?" Well, he became a permanent benefactor of the Little Sisters
of
the Poor.
Good for her. Good for her. That's a beautiful. And that tradition continues to this day, does it not?
It does, except we don't go to house to house because we probably wouldn't find anyone at home.
That's right. Not now. Yeah, and people wouldn't answer the door. People don't kind of call on neighbors anymore the way they used to. They'd call the police on you, I think. But so in your community, how do you do this begging now in modern times?
In modern times, there is a sister in each home who is designated as the beggar. And, of course, she has a companion when she goes out, one of the other sisters, always.
Right.
So we go out by two. We go to the marketplaces. We go to grocery stores, to businesses. We go anywhere that people will welcome us and want to help us with our work.
Okay.
And the people in the community are absolutely wonderful. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't be able to survive.
Well, tell me, you know, I think of all the different things that your community does, that's really something that fascinates people. I had a friend who worked down at the Board of Trade for many years downtown, and he said every Thursday, two of the sisters would be there, and that it was Thursday must have been payday or something, because they always did very well, apparently, on Thursday afternoons. And he said you all were such a fixture. But a lot of people weren't really sure who you were, what you were doing. But if the sisters were there, you know, in your beautiful habits, you certainly, they would be very generous to you. What would just kind of a typical day now be for two of the begging sisters? So say you go to the markets, you would show up at Jewel and say, "Hi, can we have some food?" Or how does that work?
Well, at the market here in Chicago, they know we're coming. And we usually go on Tuesdays. And there are a bunch of men in different stalls who welcome us. And they
so these are like the wholesale food markets.
The wholesale market, right. They know we're coming. They expect us. And as soon as we get there, they say, "Sister, what do you need today?"
Okay.
And so we tell them what we need. And if they have it, they give it to us. And if they don't have it, they'll send us on to the next stall.
Okay.
And then we go there and we ask.
So you kind of come with a shopping list
of
food you're going to make for the residents that week.
We work very closely with the kitchen to see what we need for, you know, the produce and whatever we need.
Okay. And so Sister Dorothy, how did you meet the sisters? How long have you been a member of the community, and where did you meet them, and what inspired you to join?
I am originally from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
And I actually had a career. I was working for a number of years, but I knew I had a vocation when I was 16 years old.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, I ran from it. I thought I wanted to find out what the world had to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out to work, and God kept calling. He doesn't leave you alone.
Mm-hmm.
He kept calling, and then finally I said to myself, I have to answer this call.
Mm.
So I saw a vocation director in my parish, and he said to me, "You certainly do have a vocation. Now your problem is to go find a congregation."
Right.
So I made some telephone calls, and I visited some of the other congregations. But when I went to the Little Sisters of the Poor, I was welcomed with open arms,
mm-hmm.
the biggest smile on their faces. And I even said to the sister one day, I said, "You're always smiling. What's this all about?" And mm-hmm. she said, "When you have Christ in your heart, you always smile."
Wow, yeah.
And I never knew anything about, you know, working with the elderly, except my grandmother was in our home a number of years ago. But she took me around the home, and I said, "I feel like I'm home."
Wow. So the Little Sisters of the Poor had a home for the elderly in Baltimore?
In Baltimore, okay. That's correct.
Okay.
So I volunteered there for about a year and a half before I entered. And when I entered, actually, my first vows, I came to Chicago, and that was 31 years ago.
Wow.
I never thought I'd be back again, but here I am.
How long have you been back in Chicago now, then? Recently?
I'm yeah. only here since September of last year.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, welcome. We've missed you. You came, you brought the Cubs. The Cubs have now won the World Series, sister. It's nice to have you back. You kind of a latecomer to the party, but that's fine, sister. We'll welcome you back anyway. Okay, and Sister Carolyn, tell me a little bit about your vocational journey. Where did you meet the sisters?
I had not intended actually to be a religious sister. Unlike Sister Dorothy, I discerned early on that I was called to marry and have a big family, and there was really no question about what God was calling me to. That was going to be it. And then I was out with a friend of mine. We were driving around. I had a little red convertible, had the top down, and blonde hair flying in the breeze. We're driving around the Capitol
Beltway. Sounds like a commercial of some sort. Okay, go ahead. Not a vocations commercial either. Go ahead.
No, driving around the Capitol Beltway around Washington. And she said, you know, there's this place I volunteer. Do you mind if we stop there for a few minutes? So we pulled over. I'd never heard of the Little Sisters of the Poor. And the young Mother Superior came out on the front steps and saw our guitars in the back of the car. And she said, well, why don't you bring your guitars in and sing and play for the residents? And so we did. And we were like really beginners. Uh-huh. But there were smiles on every face. Uh-huh. They appreciated it so much. And of course, at that time, I didn't realize maybe their hearing wasn't perfect, but they thought we were really good, you know.
Well, yeah, right,
and
right.
It just gave them joy.
They were just so
joy.
Appreciative of the company. Yeah.
Our little gift gave them such joy. And then a sister called me into a room where there was a little sister assisting a resident who was actually leaving this life to go home to God. And so here I am, a teenager, standing at this beautiful scene and thinking, oh my, what really does matter in life? Mm-hmm. I have one life to live. What do I want to do with it? And I knew God wanted me for himself. And I made up my mind at that time that I was going to follow his call. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted my life to make a difference for him.
And you were a Catholic and you were a practicing Catholic. It wasn't like you had to come into the church and then.
Correct.
Right. So, okay. How old were you then?
I was 17.
17. Wow. Now, does your congregation still accept young women right out of high school, or do you? I know that used to be kind of a norm. Instead of going to college, you would enter a community. But if you had that calling that early on, but is that something your community still does?
We ask the young women to have at least a year or two of college or work experience.
Okay.
I think that's very important. And then we work with each one individually about when is the right time.
Right. And then how your vocations right now. I've had the privilege of visiting both your home in Palatine and your home here in Lincoln Park. And lovely young sisters, and it seems God's continuing to bless you with vocations. Though, is that something, I know some congregations are finding that they're really getting the bulk of their vocations now from different countries rather than from the United States. Is that the same for you?
Actually, God is giving beautiful young women here in the United States, too. They're not in the great numbers that the needs of the apostolate demand, because
right.
there are so many, the elderly population is growing and there's a lot of poverty out there.
Right.
But every year we have beautiful, faith-filled, passionate, articulate young women entering, and we're just so grateful to
right.
God for them.
Well, your witness, I think, and certainly your national sort of stature was raised when you were, you know, involved in that lawsuit with the Obama administration, which is not going to be the focus of our interview today. However, I do think that made so many more people aware of you. I mean, even among the Catholic community. I mean, I've always known you because you were here in Chicago, and, you know, if you're a Chicagoan because you have two homes here, people tend to know who you are. But Catholics who were from different parts of the country where your congregation isn't present didn't know you, and I think it really raised, you know, your visibility, certainly. And did you find any women coming to you after all of that, like who heard about the work that you do and were inspired by that brave stand that you took?
We did. As a matter of fact, there were a couple of young women who said they had never heard of us until that happened. So it's ironic because our charism is one of littleness. We try
right.
to stay out of the headlines. Humble, hidden service, joyful service of the poor is our charism, and we don't seek notoriety.
Right.
We just want to do this for Jesus. And so we were called to be in the national spotlight to defend human life,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't say no to that.
Right.
And so as a result, God brought beautiful good out of it.
Oh, as he always does, you know. And so that's very helpful, because I was going to ask you, the little in the Little Sisters of the Poor doesn't refer to stature. It refers so, because I'm very tall, so people would joke you could never be a Little Sister of the Poor. But it refers to your humility. So that littleness before Christ.
It's what we strive to live. And mm-hmm. it was very important to our mother founder, St. Jean Chugan, and she passed that along to all of us. In fact, when she founded the congregation, she was put away by her spiritual director. And, you know, things like that happen so many times right. in the early days of different congregations. And so she was set aside, and because that individual wanted to take credit for founding the work, so no one even knew that she was the foundress of the work, and she was relegated to the mother house, and she lived the last 27 years of her life there, and it was very painful because she loved the elderly. She wanted to serve them. She wanted to go out and beg for them, but she was taken out of the mainstream. However, during her 27 years of profound humility, living a hidden life, there were 2,000 young women who entered and passed through those halls and worked with her and lived with her and benefited of her counsels without ever knowing that she was the foundress. So mm-hmm. a lot of people think she was canonized because of the work, mm-hmm. but she was canonized because of her charism of humility.
Right. And that was fairly recently, too, was it not?
It was. It was in 2009. And so, you know, from the time she was at the mother house there at the end of her life, the last 27 years, those young women went out to all the continents, and that was what God used to make sure that her spirit of littleness and humility would continue through the works of the congregation. Yeah, that's what we strive to live with the grace of God.
Yeah, you know, and you wonder, had she been in the homes doing the work, doing the begging, she wouldn't have had that opportunity to form those first 2,000 women and have them know her and be close to her. I mean, what an incredible opportunity that was. So
yes.
God writing straight with crooked lines. Well, we are going to walk ourselves into a break now. Please do stay tuned for my ongoing conversation with Sister Dorothy and Sister Carolyn of the Little Sisters of the Poor. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced-level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ, and I am joined this hour by Sister Dorothy and Sister Carolyn of the Little Sisters of the Poor, who are celebrating this year their 150th anniversary in the United States. And we've been talking a little bit about how both of these sisters met their congregation and what kind of inspired them to become a Little Sister of the Poor. But sisters, I'd like to talk to you now a little bit about the work itself. We talked a little bit about the begging, and I think a lot of people in the Chicago area were already familiar with that because you are such a visible presence here. But let's talk about your homes, the kinds of people that you serve. There's lots of different nursing homes, and care for the elderly is kind of becoming a big business these days, right? Because so many people are living so much longer, and because of that, services for the elderly are really sort of on the rise. But you all have been sort of a very steadfast part of that kind of service for many, many years. Sister Dorothy, how many homes do you have in the United States?
Right now we have 28 homes in the United States.
Okay. And they're located primarily in major metropolitan areas? Is that fair to say?
Yes and no. We have three provinces. You know, Baltimore is one province.
Right.
Brooklyn is another province. And then we have the Chicago province.
Right.
And in the Chicago province, we have a home as far as Gallup, New Mexico.
Wow.
And then on the West Coast, California.
Okay.
And then we have throughout, you know, the Chicago province is the one that has the most distance to travel, if you will.
Okay.
But in the Baltimore province, they're throughout the Baltimore metropolitan area.
Right.
And also the same in the Brooklyn province.
Okay. So you have 28 homes for the elderly. And tell me the types of elderly people that you serve. Because sometimes, you know, when I worked for the Archdiocese for many years, it was not unusual for me to get a call in the Cardinal's office asking, could I help get a family member into the Little Sisters of the Poor? So talk to me a little, because John Jugan had a very sort of specific vision for those she wanted to serve.
First of all, we take care of the elderly poor.
Correct.
We do not take care of the rich. John Jugan believed that the rich could, you know, take care of themselves. So what we're looking for is individuals who are 65 years of age or older,
mm-hmm.
and they would have to be poor.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that they have to be without any funds at all, but there is a maximum that we look at.
Right.
Our procedure is that when the telephone call comes in, we take as much information over the phone as possible.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we have individuals who look at the information and decide whether or not, you know, that person would be fitted for our home. Now, we do not take, for example, Alzheimer's residents, because we cannot care for them.
Okay.
You know, our home is simply not equipped for
right,
that.
Right.
But, you know.
So is it assisted living and independent living and, or kind of a mix of the two?
Our home is all skilled and we do have independent apartments.
Okay.
And that is low income apartments.
Okay. And that's at your Lincoln Park campus?
That is, yes.
And that's a beautiful campus. And I know you all started out in Lincoln Park there when Lincoln Park wasn't a particularly Tony neighborhood, but my goodness, how God planned for you and how beautiful it is to be surrounded by such a lovely neighborhood and so close to the lake and to the lakefront there. Do you take them out on outings? And
absolutely. You know, they get cabin fever if they're in the
house
too long.
Anybody does, right?
So, I mean, it depends a lot on the weather. For example, when the weather was so cold and you had the snow, we did have things planned for them to go out.
Right.
But because of the weather, we just simply could not take them out.
No, you didn't want to take that risk.
Right.
And so, Sister Carolyn, what differentiates a Little Sisters of the Poor nursing facility from, say, you know, any other service that an elderly person might pay for? What's the difference? Because people go into your home, and I know one of the things that everybody says, the first thing they walk in is how clean it is, how clean and beautiful the home is.
And I think you can feel the love. And, mm-hmm. of course, there's love in many other places as well, but our homes are just characterized by this love and this joy. And that emanates, I think, from the Little Sisters living there. We actually live on site. We have a convent at each of our homes right in the same building. And we're there day and night to serve the residents. Normally, we serve them during the day and the evening.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a need during the night, we're available. We're their little sisters. We're a home and a family. We're truly family for them. And when they come in, typically, they would be a little bit more well, and then as they decline,
mm-hmm.
We would have nursing beds available to them. And as Sister said, we don't have a dedicated Alzheimer's unit. However, when our residents decline in health, be it physically or mentally, we do keep them with us, and mm-hmm. we keep them as part of the family. We try very hard to be able to keep them in place and provide all the services they need as they age, mm-hmm. and then as they prepare to go home to God.
Because dementia and Alzheimer's are kind of different things on the aging spectrum. And so I can't imagine you don't have a good number of people who at least have the dementia piece of it.
It's very common.
Yeah.
But they're mainstream. They're part of our family.
Right. That's very beautiful. And one of the things I have a friend whose parents both lived with you and at your Palatine home before she died. And I know when her mother was dying, all the sisters, you know, she was on her way to you. And she said, I can't remember who was the mother at the time, Mother Patricia, I think. And she said, Mother Patricia, just call me. All the sisters are in the room. It's got to be close. But she was able to make it. But all the sisters were there when she came into the room. The sisters were there. And that's, I think, one of the things you're also known for, is that no one ever dies alone in your home. Not if you all can help it.
That's correct. It's the summit of our vocation. So our days are spent making the residents happy, filling their days with joy and comfort to the best of our ability. But when the moment comes for them to go home to God, we are right there at their side. We might be holding their hand, praying with them, reading mm-hmm. scripture, singing for them, or just being silent with them and loving them until the moment when God calls them home. And, mm-hmm. and typically the little sisters would be around them singing the Salve Regina.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Yeah, that's right. I know when Cardinal George was dying, that was the last thing. They were singing the Salve Regina when he passed away, and with the sisters, Albertine sisters who took care of him. And do you have any particular stories you can share about that moment of death? I think so many people are afraid of it, and so many elderly are afraid of dying. But you make it almost like a joyful sort of graduation, if you will.
It is. I had a lady once who was 105 years old,
oh my goodness.
And she was in acute respiratory distress. And I just saw panic in her eyes. And as a little sister nurse, I was able to get an order for something from the doctor to give to her intravenously that would help relieve her. And she relaxed. She became calm. She actually lived another year.
Oh, my goodness.
And then a year later, it was totally different. She was very ready to go home. Mm. The first time, she was looking up at me saying, please, please don't let me die. Please don't let me die. Mm. She wasn't finished living. And then a year later, she went home very, very peacefully. So God knows the time for
right.
each one.
Right. And that, you know, when there's, I find that so beautiful and such a contrast to some of the stories that we see, sadly, so frequently in the news now. In fact, there was a story just yesterday I saw in the news where a hospital had sent in a robot to tell a dying man that he was dying. It wasn't even a human being. It was a robot. Uh-oh. And that was their, I mean, can you imagine? And the family was incredibly upset that a robot came to tell him he didn't have very long to live, which apparently the man knew. I mean, he knew he was dying. But to be told by a robot, it just, this sort of dehumanization of yes. the elderly
yes.
and the sort of, like, you know, there's no need to send a person in to tell him this. We'll just send a robot in. It's what a contrast to the kind of service and love that you offer.
Unbelievable. And, you know, the family gathers. The other residents will come, and mm-hmm. they'll sit around the bedside, and they'll pray, and they'll remind them that they're loved. Staff will come in. You see a tear going down the cheek. You know,
yeah.
it's really very touching.
Yeah.
We are family.
Yeah, tell me about your staff. So, Sister, you mentioned you have a nursing degree, and Sister Dorothy, is that required then for the community to have, are you trained when you enter the congregation in any kind of medical care?
It's not required. When I entered, I had no medical care whatsoever. The more I was with the residents, the more I realized that the more knowledge I had would make it easier for me to care for them and make it better for them. So I actually asked when I entered if I could go to nursing and get my nursing degree. I'm an LPN. But as we go through, originally, we are taught how to take care of them. We have hospitality lessons. We have some individuals
beautiful.
Who come in and speak with us. And I did get my CNA, Certified Nursing Assistant, right away. And it just really opens your eyes and your heart to the things that you can do for these people. You know, they really reach out to you. And, you know, his sister was talking about the dying, and I think I mentioned to you earlier, the little sisters take turns around the clock, you know, to be with the resident when
right.
they're dying. The touch with the resident is so important.
Yeah.
They want to know that you're there and that they're loved.
Right. And you know, that must be what a consolation that is to families who are far away and maybe couldn't get there in time, or to know that someone wasn't left, you know, wasn't left alone. Do you find, though, that sometimes, I have heard this from doctor friends, that people who are dying will sometimes wait till everyone is there, and sometimes they'll wait until everyone's left the room, and then they die.
My grandmother was in the home, and when she was dying, we were all there, mm-hmm. except for her first son. Hmm. He was in New York at the time. And the sisters had come in and said, why don't you all come downstairs and have something to eat? Because we had been watching with her for 2 days. Hmm. So we did. We left the room, went down to get something to eat. He arrived as we were at the dinner table, went to see my grandmother, and 2 minutes later she died.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she was waiting
for him. And yeah. we knew that. You yeah. know, we didn't want to leave the room, but she apparently didn't want us there.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's funny. My dad passed away much the same way. He, you know, was in hospice for all of 12 hours. But as I like to say now, he never was a very patient person. But, you know, and we had been, you know, pretty much with one of us, you know, had been there the whole time. And I walked into the other room. And then I came back in, and my mother kept saying, I think we have to go back with your father. And, you know, and we didn't think he was going to die that quickly. We thought we had days. And we went back in the room, and then I thought, oh, boy. I mean, you could just feel, it's very funny. I'd never been in the presence of anything like that before, but I could just feel he wasn't there, you know. And so we called the hospice nurse, and he had, in fact, passed away when we walked out of the room. But I just find that very, you know, that's very fascinating. And for you all to be able to sort of see that up close every day and observe that, you know, I remember reading in the story of a soul, St. Therese being with one of the sisters in her community when she died, when they had that horrible influenza outbreak, and she said she'd never been in the presence of a dying person. It was breathtaking. She said to watch someone go, you know, and she took the woman's last tear from the corner of her eye on her handkerchief as a memento of her, and she said it was such a consolation to see someone die so peacefully, and you don't often hear death spoken of that way, you know.
There's another thought about it, too. When you're with a dying resident, you think that you are the last person that this resident will see before they meet their maker.
Yeah.
And it is. It's like a peacefulness in the room. And you can feel something different, mm-hmm. you know. I had that experience with my dad when he was dying. I knew the time had come.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that he was ready to go, you know. And
right.
I guess my experience with the little sisters helped me in that matter.
Right. Oh, I imagine tremendously. Well, we're going to go to our next break, and then we'll continue our conversation about your good work and about what might be planned for this 150th anniversary. This is very exciting. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Are we
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change, and I am joined this hour by Sister Carolyn and Sister Dorothy of the Little Sisters of the Poor, celebrating their 150th anniversary year here in the Chicago area. And just before we went to the break, we were talking about stories of being with the dying, because that is one of the charisms of the sisters, is that their residents do not die alone if the sisters can help it. There is someone there sitting with them, praying with them, singing with them. They are joyfully put into the arms of the Lord, and their last moments here are filled with peace. And most importantly, a word that Pope Francis uses a lot, accompaniment. The sisters accompany the sisters on their very, their residents, rather, on their very last journey. And Sister Carolyn, you were starting to tell me a story about, I think, the last person at your home who was passed away.
Yes. He was a Polish gentleman, and his wife and he lived at the home, and she died about a year ago, but with so much faith, and she was so at peace. She had a cross in her hand and a smile on her face,
wow.
And she was happy to go home to Jesus, and she told us that. And so just last week, her husband came back from the dining room and went to his room, and a happy, happy gentleman, and got on his bed and left us.
Oh.
And so it was just very unexpected. We did not get to assist him during his dying process because it was so quick. But it was very touching how much everybody surrounded him and cared, even after his death. And as I was going through his things in his room and holding these photographs and his mementos, it really touches my heart because he has nobody.
There's nobody. They had no children.
Nobody.
Oh, my goodness.
There's nobody to give these photos to. I think there was one, an estranged family member who disowned the parents years ago.
Oh.
And so the world doesn't know he's gone. You know, the world could care less that he's gone. But we care. And we loved him, and we miss him. And there's no one to give these photos to, but we were so blessed to be able to be his family and to treasure him.
Wow, that's something. You don't think the number of people who die alone. And, you know, I know in Japan there's an actual name for it. People who are left to just die alone, elderly people who die alone, and they're not found for days, you know, sometimes a week after their passing. It's a very frightening phenomenon. And this is, you know, again, I know your work is to celebrate the final years of the living, not so much the dying, but I know the two kind of go hand in hand. And I was on a radio program with a woman whose family owns a funeral home, and she was talking about how sad it is now that when the elderly die, so many times the children don't want to wake, they don't want a funeral mass, they just want the body either cremated or placed in a casket, and they go straight to the funeral home. They don't even have prayers in the funeral home for the, it's like they never existed. And, you know, she said, sometimes you'll hear the siblings arguing about money and saying, you know, I don't want to waste all this money on a wake. You know, he was 85. He didn't have any friends, you know, just really very heartbreaking things, you know, where that used to be a great sign of respect to your elderly family members, that you would have a wake, that you would have a funeral mass. Now it seems that a lot of families, I think in particular families where the families aren't practicing the faith regularly, I mean, there's not even a funeral, and they just, that's it. And I have a friend this happened to. Her in-laws died, and her husband's family didn't want a wake, didn't want a funeral. They had them cremated. They're sitting in cremated urns in one of the siblings' apartment because they didn't even want to do a burial yet. They thought they would wait, you know, until they could do them both at the same time because it would be less expensive. No luncheon, no death notice, nothing. And you just think, where did this come from? Do you have any thoughts on that?
We typically have the resident's funeral service right in the home. We have a
beautiful
chapel in the home, so we bring them back, and we have a beautiful liturgy. And whether they do have family or they don't, we surround them. We love them. We sing our thanksgiving to God for the life that they lived and for the eternal life that is being given to them now.
Right. And I can't imagine that in all that you do, all those souls that you've cared for are not interceding for you. Because if you, you know, I mean, for me, it distresses me to think that someone would not have a mass for someone's, you know, for the repose of someone's soul, and that you all take that obligation so seriously to bury the dead. You know, it's a corporal work of mercy. And, you know, I think probably half of all Catholics couldn't even tell you what that meant anymore. But the fact that you take that obligation so seriously, I think that's one of the reasons God has blessed you so abundantly with vocations, but also with people who, I think, you know, to know you is to love you. And once people meet you and see your homes, People are simply just impressed from the minute they walk in to the minute they leave, not just, you know, the cleanliness and the care that you give, but as you mentioned, Sister Dorothy, it's the joy and the love that just radiates from your sisters.
This last gentleman, if I could just, pick up on this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He was always the first one up the line to go to communion at Mass. He was at daily Mass.
Uh-huh.
He was in a wheelchair, and he would just pedal up, you know, and everybody knew who he was because he was the first one there. When Father came for the funeral Mass, and we kept saying, you know, he'll know who he is because he was the first one up
right.
for communion. And sure enough, Father mentioned that, you know, in his homily, and it was really a beautiful, beautiful send-off for
yeah.
him.
Well,
you know.
Let's talk about that, the spiritual care that you give to your residents. We've talked about, first, obviously, the practical care, and you have activities for them, and, you know, you make sure that they're given proper nutrition, et cetera. But let's talk about that, because that's a difference between your home and other homes, is that I've been to daily Mass, and it seems like a lot of the residents go, and it seems like you have a lot of spiritual activities that are so important to the elderly.
One of the first things that people tell us when they have a person, a loved one who wants to come into the home, is that they selected the Little Sisters of the Poor because we have a chapel and we have daily Mass.
Mm-hmm.
There have been residents who came from other nursing homes, and they're just so happy to be there to see that the chapel is there and they can go to daily Mass. The residents themselves have the rosary each day.
Wow.
The schedule has just now changed. They have 3 o'clock. They have Divine Mercy, and then following that immediately is the rosary. And they are the ones who lead the rosary.
Wow.
And it's beautiful to see that. Sometimes the sisters can't make it, but if we can, we're there. And whatever else, the residents come up with things that they want, and we try to provide everything that they want, you know, both spiritually and physically for them.
Mm-hmm. And what's a holiday like Christmas like at the home?
Wow. Christmas is really very, very special. I mean, you know, the lead up to Christmas, everybody is excited and can't wait until the baby Jesus is born.
Right.
We have midnight Mass, which we call midnight Mass at 7:30 in the evening.
Okay.
And one of the residents always takes the baby Jesus up for the
that's beautiful.
For the crib. And they don't vie for it. They just like to see that somebody's there to do it.
Right.
And they have special occasions. They have special meals, and the families come in during the holiday. You know, it's just more of a family, more
right.
of a family reunion, if you will.
Right.
You know, our home is for the family, and we really like to preach about that.
Yeah, and that's so evident, I think. And I think if there's one word that it does distinguish you, and I sort of started the conversation by talking about this, it is that concept of family, that you are a family. You're also a home where people are cared for, but it's within this context of family, which is, of course, how our Lord started his life here on the earth, right, in the context of a family. And, Sister, you've got some, I know, special things that are coming up for this 150th anniversary year. I know you have an open house, and I know you have a vocations event. Can you tell our listeners something about those?
Our vocation event is actually coming up soon. It's called Mission Chicago, and it's a service weekend for young adult women, single young adult women who have a heart for service and a special love for Jesus and are open to discerning a religious vocation. And so it starts Friday evening, March 22nd, goes through till 2 p.m. on Sunday, March 24th, and there'll be lots of opportunities to serve, both to serve the elderly poor in our home and to do projects with them for the service of our mission homes, the elderly poor in mission lands. And so there is no charge for this opportunity, and there'll be talks, there'll be an opportunity to share, there'll be some Eucharistic adoration, and an opportunity to have one-on-one vocation accompaniment with a little sister if the young woman wishes. So we look at it as a marvelous opportunity for God's grace to act
okay.
in young hearts. And if they want to register for that, they can call us at 773-935-9600 or go to our website, and they'll find the flyer there and the registration information. And the website is www.littlesistersofthepoorchicago.org.
And what's the age ranges? You mentioned young adult women. Do you have a kind of a range?
18 to 35.
Okay, very good. Okay, terrific. So young women listening out there, if you feel that God is calling you to at least explore what it might like to to be a Little Sister of the Poor, then please do go to that website at www.littlesistersofthepoorchicago.org and find out more about this upcoming, really amazing opportunity to spend time with the sisters and the elderly poor they serve. We're going to go to our final break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversation with Sister Dorothy and Sister Carolyn of the Little Sisters of the Poor. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony, and I'm joined in studio by Sister Carolyn and Sister Dorothy of the Little Sisters of the Poor, celebrating their 150th anniversary year here in the United States of America, serving the elderly poor. And we've been talking a little bit about what makes the Little Sisters of the Poor different from other nursing homes, even other Catholic nursing homes. There's something about the sisters' care and joy that really distinguishes their two homes here in the Chicago area and their other 26 homes in the United States from some other places. And the sisters, many of you who are familiar with religious life in the Catholic Church know that there are three primary vows that a sister takes, and that is poverty, chastity, and obedience. But you sisters, you take a fourth vow. You take a fourth additional vow in addition to those three I've just mentioned. Sister Dorothy, can you talk a little bit about that?
That fourth vow is hospitality, and it is through that vow that we promise God that we will spend the rest of our lives caring for the residents, caring for his elderly poor. But that hospitality extends beyond that. If a resident has the need to have the family there, we will open up an area where the family could stay with them for a while. Sometimes they come and stay overnight, maybe even 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
Whatever the reason is. And we do have the residents coming to us from time to time to let us know that their families are coming in. And, you know, could they stay there for maybe 2 or 3 days, and wherever possible, we provide that.
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow. So you go, it's beyond hospitality to the resident, him or herself.
It
extends to the person's
right.
family. What is, you know, do you feel that in taking that particular vow, is it, do you feel like you get special graces then for hospitality? Or Sister Carolyn, how does that sort of work? I mean, for people who aren't familiar with vows and what that means, does it assist you in your charism then to care for the elderly poor?
Absolutely. With every vow comes a very special grace. And we have many young women who've entered the Little Sisters of the Poor who never felt called to health care, but they feel called to this beautiful charism. And through their formation and then the vow of hospitality, they receive a very special grace, and they're able to care for and meet the needs of the elderly poor so beautifully. So yes, there's a special grace. We receive this vow from the Brothers of St. John of God. St. John of God founded them and their worldwide congregation of religious men.
Right.
And so Jean Jougan intuitively knew that that was a vow that would really help her sisters to serve well Jesus and the elderly poor. And so the vow is actually to serve our Lord himself and the elderly poor. What an amazing privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But the spirit of the vow overflows to families and to everyone who comes in the front door.
And I mean, I like that it's the word hospitality rather than sort of service, because hospitality, I think, implies a guest in your home rather than someone you're, you know, trying to help out who maybe doesn't have everything you have, right? It makes you an equal with the person, and someone to whom you're hospitable is someone you're welcoming into your home. So I love that, and I love that that's sort of the charism that, you know, guides everything you do for the elderly poor in your care. And now for people who are already married and don't have the opportunity now to join you, and wish that they had known about you earlier, but want to help you now in other ways. What kind of, I know you have lots of different ways that people can come and help you all out. Talk to me a little bit about that, Sister Carolyn. What kind of things do you need? Because sometimes people want to help you with stuff you really don't need. You know, I mean, what do you all really need, and how can people who are listening help you?
There are many different ways that you can help us out. Jean Jougan was big on involving everyone as part of the family, even those who can't come into the home. And so we have lists of things that we need for resident care that we'd be so grateful to have. And you can contact the home and we'll tell you. I mean, it can be simple things like resident care items, copy paper, just so many things. We're also looking for volunteers. We have a lay association, the Association Jean Jougan. That is a vocation within a vocation. They are consecrated lay people, men, women, married, single, who espouse the spirituality of St. Jean Jougan. They have their statutes, and they serve us in whatever ways they can, consistent with their job, their family
their
obligations,
life, right?
and so forth. And those who are discerning their vocation in life, come discern this beautiful vocation.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are in a position to help us financially, we greatly, greatly need to have more friends, more guardian angels out there to help us financially, and also to be an ambassador for us in your mm-hmm. local community, at your workplace, wherever, to tell people about us, because maybe you know people who are in a position to help us in any of these ways, financially or any of the others, and we'd be so grateful if you tell them about us, or maybe they could remember us in their will, come out and serve with us. And like I said, pray for us.
Right. Oh, well, you know, I'm always so happy. My parish once a year has one of your sisters who comes and must be the begging sister at our parish. And then I know people are always just so overjoyed to see one of your sisters. I mean, truly, that's the one thing I think when people see your sisters, they know what that religious habit means, and they know what you do for the most part, you know, and that is such, I think you're such a source of pride for the city of Chicago. You really are. And we're so grateful to have you here. And I know you don't want the accolades. That's not why you're here. But I think, something that people don't get enough opportunity to thank religious men and women for what they do.
We want to thank them as well and let them know that they are in our prayers.
Well, that's wonderful.
We and our residents pray.
Yeah.
Pray for our benefactors. Pray for all those who help us in any way.
Right. And so, Sister Dorothy, I want to kind of go back to where we began, and that was Jean Jougan and her inspiration to really kind of found this community with begging. And we've just, you know, I know you need all sorts of different things. You need practical things, and money never hurts. You know, the electricity doesn't pay for itself and that sort of thing. And the elderly have particular needs. But talk about, you know, where your sisters might be if someone is listening to this and saying, I don't even know what this woman is talking about. I've never seen one of these begging sisters. Where do you all go sort of on a general begging week? I know the market day is Tuesday. Do you go to banks and businesses and things like that as well? Or does begging also constitute like writing letters to benefactors or possible benefactors? Or
begging does constitute that as well, yes. Yeah.
And do you have an active sort of development office or fundraising office that helps you to reach out to people who might be interested in supporting you?
We do have a development office. We have a development director, and I work very closely with her. Our begging sister is the one who makes up the schedule for the week.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't know exactly where she's going. For example, today, right. I was with her this morning, and we went to church, and then she's on her way, and she says, I've got a lot of places to visit.
Oh, God
but,
bless
you know,
her. That's
she
fantastic.
Didn't share it with me, and that's okay.
Yeah.
We know when she comes home.
if she goes missing, you'll know, right?
So well, this is true.
Do you, do you still do something like you used to do? You know, I remember that, again, back in the 80s, outside the Board of Trade, the sisters would always be present out there. Are there still moments like that when people might be able to see you? I know at the market, because I've seen, you know,
right.
down at that Fulton Market, because it's not far from where my kids go to school.
One of the problems that was came up after 9/11, and the federal government took the position that they did not want people going into their buildings or even standing outside.
Right, right.
And
I didn't think of that.
That
yeah.
kind of hurt us
that
a
put
lot.
A damper on it. Yeah, I can
right.
imagine. Now you have to sign in, and you have to have a license, and you have to have someone you're going to see.
Exactly.
You can't just go into somebody's building and not... You know, have a
and
purpose.
And we used
for being
to go. We used to go to automobile plants early in the morning and uh-huh. stay there practically all day. But even the automobile plants, you know, are not as readily available as they used to be.
Right.
But if people invite us, we'll be happy to go. You know, even if it means standing out in the cold all day long.
To, right.
You know,
to talk to employees.
To
you
talk
mean?
To
yeah.
the employees
right.
as they're coming in or going out. You
right.
know, and the employees are really very nice. They usually stop and talk to us
sure.
and give us a donation.
Right. That's what are so if you had one big dream for your two homes in this area, is there one sort of big particular need that you're really hoping that, you know, you can raise some money for? Like, what's your wish list?
Well, we have a lot on our wish list, and that's usually listed in our newsletter
right.
that we put out quarterly. Right now, upcoming will be our golf tournament.
Oh, great. When will that be?
First Monday in June.
Wonderful.
First Monday in June.
Terrific.
And we also had planned a Trevino, which we had to cancel, and that's going to be scheduled for the latter part of April, and the new date will be out very shortly on
okay.
that.
So you really have activities sort of going all year long in terms of trying to keep, you know, the funds that you need in the bank to serve the elderly poor that you serve.
Right. And then, of course, there's our appeals to the churches.
Right.
You know, we try to go to a church every weekend.
Well, that's what I mentioned. Yeah, you're at my parish once a year. So that that goes on all year long.
All year long.
My goodness. Mm. Wow. That's
well, of course, we have to work, too, with the diocese. You know, if they have things planned.
Right.
Then
right,
we
right,
certainly right. wouldn't want to schedule something when they had it planned.
Right, right. Oh, boy. That's, well, you know, I think sometimes people see, you know, your big buildings or whatever, and they say, oh, you know, the Catholic Church has so much money. Look at these sisters are sitting in this big building and, you know, expensive Lincoln Park. And if they only knew, you know, that the sisters within were going out to beg for the people who live there.
We could not function without the begging.
Really?
We know that.
Oh, it's that big a part
it
of your...
It is that big a part of our congregation.
Wow. That's something.
You know, we do whatever we can, and we ask the people to help us wherever they can. And if they can invite us somewhere where we could spend the time to collect money.
Right.
You know, that's important.
Right.
You know, you hear people saying, well, I live from paycheck to paycheck. Guess what?
Right.
So we do yeah. as well.
Well, and then, you know, too, maybe it's an opportunity for people to think about, you know, that God does. It's one of the few promises in Scripture, right, that he makes that you'll be rewarded for here on earth is that, you know, if you give him back part of what God's given you, you can't outdo him in generosity. So, and your lives are certainly an example of that. And Sister, before we go, Sister Carolyn, tell us about the open house.
It's going to be on Sunday, April 14th from 1 to 5, and we hope everybody comes.
Is it Lincoln Park or Palatine?
It's in Lincoln Park, and we want to practice that spirit of our vow of hospitality. So 1 to 5, all kinds of attractions, including the visit of a mystery guest from the Chicago sports world who has
something
to show you.
Oh, my goodness. So that's Sunday, the 14th of April from 1 to 4 at the Lincoln Park Homes. So if you've ever walked past that home and wondered what's going on inside,
1 to 5.
Wonderful. Well, this has been Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony, joined by Sister Carolyn and Sister Dorothy. God bless you and have a great week.
Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is wrought. It's time to be stirred. The time.